Greetings and welcome to the Profound Medical Third Quarter 2018 Financial Results Conference Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. A brief question-and-answer session will follow the formal presentation. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to introduce your host, Stephen Kilmer, Profound Medical Investor Relations. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. Let me start by pointing out that this conference call will include forward-looking statements regarding Profound and its business, which may include, but is not limited to, expectations regarding the efficacy of Profound's technology in the treatment of prostate cancer, uterine fibroids, and palliative pain. Often, but not always, forward-looking statements can be identified by the use of words such as plans, is expected, expects, scheduled, intends, contemplates, anticipates, believes, proposes, or variations, including negative variations, of such words and phrases, or state that certain actions, events, or results may, could, would, might, or will be taken, occur, or be achieved. Such statements are based on the current expectations of the management of Profound. The forward-looking statements and circumstances discussed in this conference call may not occur by certain specified dates or at all, and could differ materially as a result of known and unknown risk factors and uncertainties affecting the company, including risks regarding the pharmaceutical industry, economic factors, the equity markets generally, and risks associated with growth and competition. Although Profound has attempted to identify important factors that could cause actual actions, events, or results to differ materially from those described in forward-looking statements, there may be other factors that cause actions, events, or results to differ from those anticipated, estimated, or intended. No forward-looking statement can be guaranteed. Except as required by applicable securities laws, forward-looking statements speak only as of the date on which they are made, and Profound undertakes no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statement, whether a result of new information, future events, or otherwise, other than as required by law. On the call today, representing the company, are Dr. Arun Menawat, Profound's Chief Executive Officer, and Aaron Davidson, the company's Chief Financial Officer and Senior Vice President of Corporate Development. With that said, I'll now turn the call over to Aaron.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to our third quarter 2018 conference call. On behalf of the management team and everyone at Profound, I would like to thank you for your ongoing interest in our company. And for those of you who are shareholders, we appreciate your continued support. I will turn the call over to Arun in a moment for an update on our commercial activities. However, before I do, I'd like to provide a brief update on our third quarter 2018 financial results. To streamline things, all of the numbers I will cite have been rounded and are therefore approximate. For the three-month period ended September 30, 2018, the company recorded revenue of $304,000, with $250,000 from the sale of products and $54,000 from installation and training services. As Arun will discuss a little later, this did not include any new system sales. It compares to $1.45 million in the same period last year, which, in contrast, was driven primarily by the recording of revenue from the sales of systems. Expenditures for R&D decreased $235,000 for the 3 months ended September 30, 2018, compared to the same period in 2017. The decrease in overall R&D spending was primarily driven by decreases in clinical trial costs, travel, and rent due to the completion of our TACT pivotal clinical trial enrollment initiatives and less clinical trial-related travel. These costs were offset by an increase in material costs. Amortization of intangible assets increased by $84,000 due to the Sonalive transaction and amortization of the acquired intangible assets. General and administrative expenses for 2018 third quarter were higher by $134,000 compared to the 3 months ended September 30, 2017. Overall, the company recorded a third quarter 2018 net loss of $5.1 million or 5 cents per common share compared with the net loss of $5.5 million or 9 cents per common share for the same period, 3 month period in 2017. As at September 30th, 2018, Profound had cash of $35.2 million. At the end of July, Profound announced that it entered into a long-term loan agreement with the CIBC Innovation Banking Group. The loan has a term of 48 months and bears interest at CIBC's prime rate plus 2.5% per annum, with monthly interest-only payments for the first 15 months, extendable to 21 months under certain circumstances, followed by equally monthly installments of principal and interest. Profound used the proceeds to repay its current debts, including the remaining balance under its 2015 loan with Knight Therapeutics, which bore interest at a relatively high rate of 15%, and for working capital purposes. Finally, we announced our graduation to the TSX on July 11, 2018, and began trading on Canada's premier stock exchange 2 days later. In addition to being a significant milestone for Profound, the graduation increases our exposure to a broader range of institutional investors. With that, I'll now turn the call over to Arun.
Thank you, Aaron. Let me begin with an update on Sonaleve, which received the Chinese Food and Drug Administration's approval in May for the non-invasive treatment of uterine fibroids. Unfortunately, the initial approval listed our partner Philips as the manufacturer, and it frustratingly took us a few months to obtain acknowledgement from the CFDA that Profound is now the manufacturer of record. This delayed our ability to complete in China until this was accomplished at the end of September. With that now resolved, we're pleased to report that in Q4, we expect to ship our first Sonaleve system already sold in China. The first commercial Sonaleve is being installed at one of the leading teaching and KOL sites in Beijing, which will also make it a good reference site. On top of this accomplishment by Profound, Philips is leveraging their significant MR system market share in China and have been actively generating leads while we were dealing with the approval transfer. So while we couldn't close deals until now, our pipeline for Sonaleve capital sales has been building nicely in China. Turning to the TULSA-PRO system, as you know, we have always considered our launch in Europe to be a pilot or a limited launch, as our priority has been to leverage the early regulatory clearance in Europe to demonstrate and learn about the full capability of our technology and use that knowledge to maximize our commercial readiness for a strong U.S. launch we anticipate in the second half of 2019, which is when we believe we will obtain U.S. FDA clearance. I would like to spend the rest of my time here today sharing with you what we have learned from our pilot European launch and how that will benefit us when we launch in the United States next year. Our customers have now completed well over 100 cases in Europe. The patients who have been treated in the commercial setting, generally speaking, report high level of satisfaction, minimal post-operative pain, and normal life function within a week or so after the procedure. We're quite encouraged by this feedback, and we attribute it to the fact that our technology kills tissue cells at 55 degrees centigrade with real-time temperature control, allowing for gentle death of the targeted cells and thereby minimizing negative responses to the treatment by the body. We have also confirmed with post-treatment MR imaging that the TULSA-treated prostates continue to shrink down often to less than 10% of their original size. We believe that as this type of data and feedback continues to be generated, it will help both the physicians and patients gain greater confidence in our technology. As the mainstay treatments of prostate cancer treatment are surgery and radiation, and they typically work initially for 70 to 80% of patients, we're learning that physicians need more tools in their toolbox to treat patients along the path of this often chronic disease. We're finding that physicians are treating a greater variety of patients with TULSA as they continue to gain more experience with our technology. Let me take a moment here to share a few examples with you. We have now treated 5 patients who are considered palliative cancer patients as they are diagnosed with metastatic prostate cancer. Normally, these patients have a life expectancy anywhere from approximately a few months to 5 years. While they are no longer candidates for major surgery, the problem is that their prostates continue to grow, causing symptoms such as severe bleeding and constriction in their urination. Using TULSA on these patients to ablate the tissue, and in so doing substantially reducing the size of the prostate without any incision, has resulted in minimizing the bleeding and in many cases even eliminating the need to catheterize for urination. Put simply, these patients have shown less need to worry about blood loss and can often resume urinating naturally. We're quite pleased with these results and again believe that this type of data demonstrates another potential use and flexibility of our technology. In this case, to improve the patient's quality of life rather than extend a terminal cancer patient's life. Another group of patients that is benefiting from TULSA is those who have been diagnosed with severe BPH. The primary appeal of TULSA for BPH relates to 2 factors. The first is what you're already familiar with, the precision and customizability of our technology. TULSA enables the physician to precisely define the transition zone of the prostate, and the ablation causes the prostate to substantially shrink over time. This shrinkage has the potential to provide a durable treatment, although we do not have sufficient data to make that claim yet for patients with BPH. The second, and in my mind, more interesting part of the TULSA technology is that it also gives physicians the ability to penetrate the heat energy deeply into the prostate, enabling them to treat much larger prostates than other minimally invasive procedures. In fact, our physician customers in Europe have routinely treated prostates that are much larger than 80 cc's, which are already over 2 times larger than normal size. TULSA was recently used to treat a 250 cc prostate. So in summary, we think TULSA may have a significant competitive advantage in the large prostate BPH segment. To put this all in perspective, it is worth noting that CE mark for TULSA is for ablation of prostate tissue. As such, the current indication already covers the use for BPH. Other regulatory jurisdictions typically approve a similar labeled indication. In addition, a number of the BPH cases in Europe that I have described today are also being done under IRB, and so we will expect that multiple study results will be published in 2019, increasing the clinical profile of TULSA in BPH. Another aspect of what we have learned from the European pilot launch relates to the time requirement to perform TULSA procedures. During our clinical trials, a typical procedure time was 4 hours or longer. When we installed our device in the first commercial setting, the procedure time was not significantly lower. Over the last 12 months, however, with support of our physicians, we have been working to streamline the clinical workflow for the TULSA procedure, and I'm happy to report that doctors are now routinely performing 4 procedures in a single regular business day. This is significant as it is substantially more efficient than most other common interventions for prostate cancer. We believe that the efficiency of TULSA, combined with the fact that it is a one-and-done procedure and it does not require a long and in future potentially any hospital stay for a patient to recover, will also be an important factor in driving the adoption of the technology. Putting it all together, we believe that there are multiple factors that will drive strong adoption of TULSA in the United States and around the world. Among them, clinical data, including substantial decrease in PSA, sustainability of PSA reduction, shrinkage of the prostate post-procedure, and anticipated long-term procedure success that is similar to surgery and radiation of 70 to 80%, very good safety and minimization of disabling side effects such as incontinence, bowel dysfunction, and erectile dysfunction. There may still be additional factors that come to light, but so far, we're very confident that TULSA technologies will score well against these adoption drivers. TULSA is proving to be a more flexible, safer, incision and radiation-free option for two very large patient populations, prostate cancer and BPH with very large prostates. Turning to our pilot TULSA Pro system sales, we continue to develop and assess our business models and sales methodology while establishing our own direct sales and marketing teams for the system capital and disposable components. The direct sales team's top priority is to cultivate adoption of TULSA technology, support our clinical customers' TULSA Pro procedures, and increase the utilization of the systems and their disposable components. These disposables, along with equipment servicing, are expected to generate strong recurring revenues. With the help of the sales teams from both Philips and Siemens, which we expect will further build a pipeline of potential buyers of our technology. Based upon these factors and indicators, we're expecting that the initial commercial launch of Sonalive in China, combined with growing interest from European doctors, clinics, and patients in TULSA Pro, will result in the fourth quarter being the highest revenue quarter of 2018. In summary, we're pleased to report that we're preparing to ship the first Sonalive system to China in the coming days, with a growing pipeline of capital sales in that region. European clinicians' expanded TULSA Pro clinical use is exciting as it bodes well for the technology's potential to be commercialized for both prostate cancer and BPH. And finally, we expect that growing interest in European doctors, clinics, and patients in TULSA Pro, combined with the initial commercial launch of Sonalive in China, will increase our sales momentum during the remainder of 2018 and into 2019. This ends our prepared remarks for today. With that, we're happy to take any questions you might have. Operator.
Thank you. We will now be conducting a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you'd like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment, please, while we poll for questions. Our first question comes from the line of Jason Mills with Canaccord Genuity. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, Arun and Aaron. This is Cecilia on for Jason. Arun, I was just wondering, could you provide a little more information both around the ongoing BPH studies, but also what you have going on in salvage cases, and then just any future studies looking at economics?
Sure. Good afternoon.
with VPH, there are a couple of things. The first one is we have we've done a retroactive analysis of phase one, and in our corporate presentation, you have you can see some of that data where 9 of the 30 patients were also had BPH, even though they had cancer, and it shows that we went from intermediate IPPS numbers of 16 down to 6.3, which would be considered well treated. And so on the back of this, we have there's a clinical study underway in Europe that will treat up to 30 patients. And following that study, we are in the process of looking at a multi-center study. So at the moment, I think there are 2 studies going on in Europe that will be under IRB and publishable. And then following that, we will look at a multi-center study.
Okay, great. And then I guess just in your commercial sites in Europe right now, can you talk a little bit more about, I know you're talking about expansion into BPH, but just as well along the prostate cancer severity spectrum and kind of what type of mix you're seeing in those sites. Thank you.
Yes. Yes. You know, I think, as I mentioned in the prepared remarks, one of the things that we are finding that we think will be a key driver to success for this product is that, you know, as we introduced it in Europe, we focused our attention into what we call intermediate risk patient. And those are patients that have disease that is severe enough where treatment is recommended, but it is confined in the prostate, and that doing radiation or full prostatectomies would be considered too much. And we continue to feel that is a very good sweet spot. But the thing that is really interesting that in the last 3 months or so that we have learned is that this technology can be used on some of those severe patients where they have either failed radiation treatment, so these are considered salvage patients, or they have actually failed any treatment where the prostate is now just growing and they are palliative. And so we think that that segment is also large enough that we think it can help us drive adoption. So that's that other end of the spectrum. The other end of the spectrum is, you know, BPH where there is no cancer, but the prostate has grown. And we think the ideal way to deal with all this is the shrinkage of the prostate to original size or even less than the original size, which we think can effectively, at least based upon the patients that we've done, which are prostate cancer patients, we think it will be a very durable treatment also. So we're, at the moment then, we're basically thinking that, okay, we can position this product as a very flexible product and not just an intermediate risk product, but a flexible product where a variety of patients can be treated. And then if we combine that with the fact that we were in this last quarter also demonstrated that we can literally treat patients within 2 hours and most of these patients can go home the same day, we think that is sort of the evolving position of TULSA at this point.
Great. Thank you for taking our questions.
Thank you, Cecilia.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Ben Hainer with Alliance Global Partners. Please proceed with your question.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks for taking the questions.
Good afternoon, Ben.
First off, I'll start on Sonalive. You mentioned that Philips, you know, kind of the snafu there that occurred. You have that figured out. You're going to ship the first unit soon. But you also mentioned that the pipeline is building pretty nicely. I guess, could you give a little color on that? I mean, is it something that, you know, you've got half a dozen potential institutions in the hopper, and it's just a question of, you know, how many you can close and how quickly you might be able to ship some of these for install? Any more color there that you could help out with would be great.
Yes, I'm very happy to, Ben. So let me start with the upper end picture for the HIFU technology in general in Asia. Mm-hmm. So, Asian economies are growing at a rapid pace. Healthcare is an important part of that growth for them. And in China in particular, there are approximately 100 systems where this thermal ultrasound technology is used, and it's in various applications. And so, in general, it's much more of an accepted concept already. And so when we bring the MR-guided thermal ultrasound technology, and we're really focusing it on uterine fibroids, I think that we don't have to do as much of the evangelical work that we would normally have to do when you bring a new technology. So I think from that perspective, it's a very good place to be. I can point explicitly to an example here, and it happens to be in South Korea. So there's a hospital in South Korea by the name of Mint Intervention Hospital. And so what they have done is they are a full-service treatment for uterine fibroids or pain because of fibroids in the uterus. And they explicitly are now marketing MR HIFU or Sonalive product. And, mm-hmm. I visited them a few weeks ago, and they're basically saying, look, we are getting patients at the run rate about 600 to 700 per year. And we can, do the MR on these patients, and we can, about a third of these patients qualify for MR, and we do it in about 2 hours in the afternoon. And the other patients, we do other procedures, like some of them are late-stage disease, and we do full hysterectomy on them. So we kind of see that kind of a program being set up nicely in a country like China and Southeast Asia in general. And so thereby, I think that's the position, and thereby we're kind of optimistic overall. Now, having said that, and the pipeline is decent, having said that, we are obviously at early stage, and we want to continue to be cautious in terms of the rate with which we can develop this. But I think that all of the data that I see certainly points to, a nice opportunity for Sonalive in Southeast Asia.
Okay, that's very helpful. Thank you. And then, I know you're kind of in discussions with the FDA on Sonalive. On what you might have to do, would you have to provide, get some clinical data or not? Are there any updates on that front?
So I think we are on track to, we're submitting our final set of data to them in this quarter for this. And I think that we, as soon as we hear, we will certainly announce something. So I guess I would say, we are certainly continuing to make progress.
Okay, great. And then I guess moving back to Tulsa Pro and some of the findings that you've had in Europe here, if I heard you correctly on these palliative treatments that you've done in prostate cancer, I heard you right, in certain cases it's eliminated the need for catheterization. Is that immediately after the procedure?
Yes, it's typically within 3 days after the procedure. And, same thing is going on, that the prostate tissue dies, and all the blood vessels in that region get cauterized automatically. So the bleeding stops pretty much in less than 24 hours. And then there is a little bit of edema or inflammation, and that stops within a couple of days. And so the urination can be pretty natural within 3 days after the procedure. So, it's very much similar outcome that we see to, regular full ablations.
Okay, that's great. And then I guess lastly for me, you know, you mentioned that at least one account has gone from doing 3 patients a day to 4 patients a day. Are those all prostate cancer treatments necessarily, or are those include some BPH treatments? And if so, are the BPH treatments generally faster because you're a, or is that not the case? I mean, because I think you're probably not as ablating quite as much tissue in BPH.
Yes. So that's a very good question, Ben, because that's one of the things we're watching is what's the variety of patient population that is being treated and exactly what is the type of treatment that is going on. So if they're doing a full ablation, a full prostate ablation, it's somewhere between 2 to 2.5 hours. If they're doing BPH cases, they are far less than 2 hours, so they might be, you know, hour and 15 minutes, hour and a half or so. And then there are partial ablations that are, you know, between hour and a half to 2 hours as well. So so you're right, the BPH cases are faster. We're ablating the transition zone, which is about half of the prostate, typically.
But to put it in context, ablation times typically range, whether it's a small ablation or a large ablation, they tend to range between 30 and 50 minutes. So the delta for ablation time typically isn't that big in 20 minutes. It can make the difference between it being 1.5 hours versus 2 hours. A lot of it has to do with workflow. And so part of the limited launch in Europe is learning in a commercial setting about the workflow. And so even large prostates where he's ablated the whole gland, I watch these reports as they come in each week, and he's running around 2 hours for whole gland ablations, for MRI time, MRI time, yes, and for smaller, he's maybe an hour and a half. And so the things we really watch are MRI time and anesthesia time. And so even when he was doing, you know, 4 full cases a day, he's only running, for him, his activity level typically is between an hour and 15 and 2 hours per case.
Okay. Thanks for all the color. That's very helpful. Appreciate you taking the questions, guys. Thanks.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press *1 on your telephone keypad. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. Our next question comes from the line of Rahul Sarugaser with Paradigm Capital. Please proceed with your question.
Thank you. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call. So I just want to say that the data around the BPH and utility of TULSA is definitely very exciting. And so you've talked a lot about the adoption strategy that you're developing for TULSA, specifically in prostate cancer patients with the intermediate patients with Gleason 6 to 7. So as you start to develop your adoption strategy in BPH, have you identified a similar beachhead market for that?
Good afternoon, Raul. Yes, I think that you know, so far, one of the things that is exciting about our application in BPH is that we're treating prostates that are really large. As I mentioned in the prepared remarks, recently we treated a prostate that was a 250cc prostate. And so when we look at the data analysis, what we find is that prostates that are larger than 80 cc size are considered large prostates. And when you get to, for example, 120 cc or larger, typical treatment of those patients is really full prostatectomy, or what they call simple prostatectomy, where they're effectively removing the whole prostate. And that's a pretty severe intervention. It is, you know, it's basically as if the patient had cancer, so you have the same issues related to outcomes and you have the same issues related to recovery. And so we think that positioning this product, particularly in that large prostate segment where the current options are really, really limited and not very good in terms of side effect, we think that's where we would position this product in the beginning.
That's great. Thanks so much. And then just have one more quick question around the TAC trial data. So do you have an estimate on when you think you'll be presenting that final data, potentially AUA, in May?
Yes. So we are on track. Obviously, it's blinded to management, but we're on track, and we are looking to present this at the AUA. It will be a podium presentation at the AUA. That's where we would submit this.
Fantastic. It's in early May. Great. Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
Thanks, Rahul.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Robert Beiler with Richardson GMP Limited. Please proceed with your question.
Hello, Arun. Thanks for taking the calls. My question is a bit more general in terms of the U.S. market for TULSA-PRO. I know you're awaiting FDA approval there. Can you just sort of quantify really what the opportunity is and the timeline for units of TULSA-PRO in the U.S. In the coming year or more?
Oh, I'm very happy to. So overall, there are about 5.8 million patients between U.S. and Europe that have been diagnosed with prostate cancer. And so they're living with this prostate cancer. And these patients are typically segmented between low risk, intermediate risk, and high risk. And the easiest way that we look at it is Gleason score. So patients that are below Gleason score 6 are typically considered low risk. Patients that are typically Gleason score high volume 8 or higher would be considered high risk patients. So initially we are positioning this into that intermediate risk, which is Gleason score 7, and late stage 6 and early stage 8. That population in between U.S. and Europe together is about 200,000 procedures. And now the other things that I have talked about today, which would be that we can treat some of these salvage cases or palliative cases, or we can treat some BPH cases, that is not included in this number. So I think that if we look at the large prostate size, it could, in fact, be large prostate for BPH. That could, in fact, be even larger than the 200,000 that I described. So that's kind of the ballpark of where we are. And the type of patients that we're explicitly focusing on are patients who would be, you know, who have active lives, who want to make sure that they can save the nerve bundles so that they can maintain ED. Patients who are BPH patients who are, might also be low-risk prostate cancer and active surveillance, so that instead of waiting, they're going to need some treatment for BPH anyway, and they can get treated. We've actually done a case like that recently where this was a pure BPH patient, but in the procedure, because we're in the MR, they saw a suspicious region, and the physician decided they were going to treat it prophylactically in that case. So that's a good target market. Patients who would otherwise go to radiation. And we think that the patients who typically go to radiation have comorbidities because they cannot get surgical procedures. And we think that market could benefit. And since the urologist will do that procedure and the urologist is the gatekeeper for these patients, we think that expanding their portfolio so that they can use our procedure on this type of patients and they can continue to do their robotics on the late-stage patient, that's the positioning for that size of the market.
Thanks. Can you also comment on the uptake of these, of the TULSA-PRO or BPH devices in the U.S. over the coming year or 2019?
So at the moment, we're expecting that, you know, if things go as we believe they will, we should be in the U.S. market in the second half of 2019, so let's say fall of 2019. We are in the process of putting our market entry strategies together, so I don't have a lot of details I can share with you today, but I think that what to me what's important is that a very limited or a very controlled approach that we took in Europe has allowed us to really understand the potential of this technology and the benefits and also the areas that we needed to improve, like, you know, treatment time and so on. And so I think now that we are, you know, well armed with that information, I think that the places that we believe we will go to are likely to be, you know, those high volume centers initially that have traditionally focused on the patient pay model, where it's already well established, and those centers where, you know, robotics are well established to be able to say, we can now augment that practice with another image-guided robotic procedure that can be focused on a different segment. That's the kind of centers that we're looking to initiate.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. I would like to turn the call back over to Dr. Menawa for any closing remarks.
Thank you so much. This is our last call for the year. Happy holidays to everyone, and look forward to our year-end call sometime in Q1. Thank you.